and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
So the question was, like, how do we talk about the indigenous people of Minnesota? And we're like, we lead with contemporary voices and pieces because we wanted to counteract that notion that Native people are no longer here.
Buju, Anin, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Rita Walczak Arndt of the White Earth Nation. Rita is the Program and Outreach Manager of the Native American Initiatives Department at the Minnesota Historical Society. Through her work, Rita is focused on Indigenous representation in the Historical Society and encourages people to think differently about the land now known as Minnesota. She tells us about the challenges of cataloging the Indigenous Object Archive, examining the history of this land beyond statehood, and how Indigenous art is inseparable from culture and Indigenous ways of living. We spoke with her in November of 2022. Enjoy.
Buju, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Mi gwech for joining us today. Native Lights is, at its core, a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have wonderful conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. These are community leaders, artists, musicians, a bunch of awesome people. So we talk to them about their gifts, how they share those gifts with their community. And it centers around, you know, finding purpose and contributing to the community around you. So I can't wait to continue amplifying Native voices today. So Leah, how you doing?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm great. I feel like, you know, with the lack of light, it's hard to wake up. I feel like, you know, 4 or 5 p.m., I'm finally starting to get awake, and then it starts getting dark again. It's an odd time to exist. But actually, I'm curious, how do you feel about daylight savings time?
Daylight saving time? I knew it. I was going to ask you that, too. We've been talking about that a little bit. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like, hasn't there been times where they've got rid of it because people, you know, didn't like it? And then they eventually regretted that decision. They just reversed it again. So I feel like I kind of just want it to go away, but I know, like, I probably will regret it. I don't know. What do you think?
And, you know, I always thought it was a little silly until I started sending my kid out to the bus stop in the morning.
Sure.
And when it got super dark, we wear a headlamp now to walk down a quarter mile or so to the mailboxes for him to get picked up. It's dark. And then, you know, before we put our clocks forward, then at least get a little, a little lighter. You can see your feet in front of you, but yeah, it's a tricky one. I kind of think, what if we just, instead of picking one or the other, just like go a half an hour towards the other, just do like a compromise.
Yeah, a little compromise.
Nobody wins.
Why not?
Nobody loses.
Everybody's just slightly annoyed in that. Today, our guest is Rita Walczak Arndt, and here she is. Buju, Rita.
Buju, Anin. Rita Walczak Arndt, Dijnakaz, Gawaba, Bekanakug, and Dujaba. My name is Rita Walczak Arndt. I am of Polish descent and a citizen of the White Earth Nation of Ojibwe. I was born, that's smooshy, and I was born and raised in the suburbs. So that's where I am around from the cities, and I currently work at the Minnesota Historical Society as a program and outreach manager in the Native American Initiatives Department.
Nice.
Sorry for my cat. I swear my whole thing is when I start talking, he's like, who's she talking to?
Oh, I can hear the meowing.
Did you say Smooshy?
Yeah, his name is Smooshy.
That's a great name.
He's very vocal. He's got a smoker's meow. That's what my husband says.
Mm-hmm.
what is on your mind lately? Is there anything that you're kicking around, thinking about, mulling over that's coming to the surface for you?
I'm thinking about the 250th anniversary of the United States. So working at the Minnesota Historical Society, so apparently it's in 2026. And to me, as an Indigenous person, I'm like, I don't care about the birth of, like, I could care less about, you know, the birth of America. And we're in, like, where we are is, like, we weren't one of the original colonies or whatever. And so I was like, what was happening here? But then I realized, like, having those conversations, I was out in New York at a conference for the American Association of State and Local History. And, like, in New York on the East Coast, they are all, like, in this to win, like, because they got all this stuff to talk about the 250th, right? And, like, stuff was happening, like, it was super colonized over there. So all this crazy business was happening. And I'm just like, I don't care about them. Like, I seriously don't. I have always have a small hope that the United States will crumble before the 250th, just because why not?
You said it out loud.
I told this to the director of the Historical Society, and he was like, oh, I bet you a lot of people would agree with you for that. So I'm like, people are going to think it's chaotic. But I realized we also have an opportunity because of where we are to talk about what was happening here and what we now call Minnesota, and like who was here and what kind of like impact did that have for Minnesota, which is a lot. Like 1776, like it's not like there were, you know, people were signing papers or what they probably, I mean, they were, there was fur traders, right? But it wasn't in the same sense that this all colonized history is. So I was like, I really am trying to think of how to better take advantage of that so we can thrust it into people's faces when everybody else is celebrating, instead of just focusing on what happened out east 250 years ago. Like, what happened? What was happening here, like in Minnesota? And like, there's so many opportunities. So that's like that. It's been on my mind because that is what I want to talk about, not about the founding fathers.
I hear that so much. And I didn't even realize that was coming up. So yeah, thank you for telling me. You must have to work really far out in advance.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. But what that just brings up kind of a pet peeve of mine too, is when people from like around here or wherever are like, oh, I'm going to go out east where there's like so much more history.
Yeah, and we don't have like castles or like dungeons. Right. I mean, I love me a good castle, don't get me wrong, but it's that Western thought of what is history and like how, and they want to see, people want to see that old 500-year-old house or whatever, and realizing, well, our ancestors, everything they did was meant to, you know, recycle back into the earth. Like there wasn't meant to have something to stand for 500 years. Even those, I'm sure a lot of those houses that are upright, still upright now, probably weren't built to stand for 500 years. So it's just really interesting to think about. And a lot of people, they romanticize that because they, you know, the castles over in Europe and all of these things, and they miss out on all this other history that's happened just because they get stuck on like having a tangible item in their hand, or like they need something exactly from this date. Otherwise they don't really understand it. And I struggle with that a lot because people are like, well, do you have an artifact that you can share with us from the 1650s about Ojibwe people? And I was like, no. I was like, but I can tell you some of the things that they did. And like, why can't we use a contemporary item that is still done in our traditions that was done 500 years ago? You know, like wild rice has been eaten in this place for centuries. There's a pot that we have in our archaeology collection that had wild rice residue from 600 CE. So if my math is good, that's 1400 years ago. So that is amazing and so meaningful to me to think about how food and like that kind of thing coming together for meals, that kind of thing. That to me is what I hold on to instead of like these old buildings. I think about we've been eating the same food. And it's still good. We love it. We love it.
That's great, though. I like your reaction, you know, to the 250th is, you know, like, I don't care about it, but at the same time, you want to think about providing a perspective of what's happening in Minnesota. So I'm just curious where that comes from. Like, where does that passion come from?
So I've always liked history and social studies, but I've always been a very visual learner. So my degrees are in art history, because you look at a painting or something and you just learn all about it. And then I could remember, that's how I remember who painted it, what was going on, who the figures were, all kinds of things. So that really is how I got into history, is more from that way, because of that visual learning. And because my family's from White Earth, I always had that interest since being little, growing up, to know more about my community, especially from living in the suburbs. I had that disconnect. I would go up to the reservation, sure, but I didn't grow up there. And I wasn't necessarily, besides my cousins, I wasn't really around many Native kids. So I really had to, look out for that information. So art was a really cool way to do it, because one of the things that's cool is that a lot of people, when they think of the term art, they think of fine arts. But for Native people, anything that is made is essentially art. And that definition kind of got taken away from Native people, I feel like, because of what other people expected out of, as fine art. And, because the care and the thought that is put into a lot of things that are just used for day-to-day use is just amazing to look at, and the detail and the ideas and everything. So that I really latched on to that visual thing, to just look at it and then be able to tell a story from it. And I absolutely, so that's where I fell in love with it. And in grad school, I was able to really hone in on focusing on Indigenous representation, especially in museums, which is not that great overall. And so it's a great conversation. So that kind of steered me towards the museum field and to where I work now today. Now at the Historical Society, I started as a cataloger. So it was pretty entry level, but it was cool, because I like that database kind of work too. It's always fun. And I was fortunate to be able to catalog the majority of the Native American collections. There's about 6,000 artifact collections. I hate the word artifacts, so I'll call them 3D objects, but there was about 6,000 that had Indians of North America type classification, and only about a third of them were digitized when I started. And then before I transitioned out of that position, I was able to get 90% of that done. And the reason I didn't finish it is because of that very generic Indians of North America, and it would be an arrow with nothing on it to tell me anything. So it was a lot, it would be a lot more work. So I'm really grateful to have that. And so I have, I've learned a lot about our collections and all kinds of stuff.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our conversation with Rita Walczak-Arndt of the White Earth Nation. Rita is the Program and Outreach Manager of the Native American Initiatives Department at the Minnesota Historical Society. We spoke with her in November 2022.
Could you talk more about that, the digitizing of these 3D objects, and just how that works? I'm really curious.
Yeah, so most museums, any place that has some kind of collection, has some kind of cataloging management system database. And the good news is that the Historical Society, uses the same system as the National Museum of American Indian in DC. So if I ever want to go, I have that going for me, that I have that background. but it's essentially a way to record this, the object itself, where it lives, should it move anywhere, the movement, if it is ever conserved, if it was put on exhibit, and have any information that came in with the object tied to it. So the Historical Society has been collecting since long before Minnesota was even a state. 1849 was when it started. And literally number one was a Native object. The first thing, number one, was a Native object. I think it was either a pipe or a tomahawk, something really like that. But it was just very interesting. So the Historical Society has been collecting Native stuff forever. And whatever that the person who donated the item told, like, gave with that stuff is what was there. So good and bad, because sometimes people, they didn't know anything, or people lie. We have a lot of Sitting Bull things, which is very interesting because Sitting Bull didn't live here. But, you know, sure. You know, I don't know. He got around. I know that. It's hard to know if that is accurate or not. So there's a lot going into that. And like part of the digitization too is like making sure there's a photograph, measurements, stuff like that, like talking about materials. So that's when I really, like, I was all up in the business of some of the things, which is really fun too, because then you get to see the details. And I love the details on some of the objects, because you see the whole thing and fine and dandy. But when those details, my husband bought me a macro lens for my own beadwork to take close-up photos of, but I used it for some of the collections items. And you can see some of the old thread pieces. You can see some of the tracings that our grandmothers traced on those designs and stuff. And you can see the sinew that was used in some of the things. So it's just, I absolutely love it. And I'm not in collections as much as I would like to be anymore, but I still am actively trying to share what I know about the collections, especially with tribal communities.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and AMPRS, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Rita Walczak-Arndt, a White Earth Nation citizen who is the Program and Outreach Manager of the Native American Initiatives Department at the Minnesota Historical Society.
Was there a particularly interesting, fun, frustrating, something piece that you digitized like that?
I'll tell you about a project that took way longer than I thought it would. And I'm very grateful that I was able to do that. Cause at one point the digitization focus at the Historical Society was on quantity, not quality. But when I was doing it, there was more of an emphasis on quality, which was, I think, really a nice turn and also a different thing. There was this dude. His name was Gilbert Wilson, and he was, I believe, a Presbyterian minister. But in his spare time, he was an amateur anthropologist. And while he, in his spare time, as doing his anthropology hobby, he was hired by the American Museum of Natural History in New York to travel to Fort Berthold, North Dakota, to the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara tribes to essentially study them and to collect items for the Museum of Natural History. Because he was just doing anthropology for funsies and not as, like, he was not a trained anthropologist, he wrote down exactly what these folks said, versus a lot of anthropologists at the time just were writing down what they were hearing, what they were thinking. Oh, okay, this is how they process food or hunt or stuff like that. So it's a very interesting collection. And while the Museum of Natural History collected that, we have his personal collection that he collected himself at the Historical Society. So there's journals he wrote, there's photographs, there's artifacts, all these things. And it was donated by his widow in the 30s, and it was split up in the museum amongst different places, and they got it disconnected. But a lot of that stuff there was a disconnect between what was written in the journal about these pieces, like gardening tools, these dried squashes, stuff like that. There was a disconnect. So I was able to actually reconnect them together with these kinds of things. And it was really great. And it took, because a lot of the stuff was on microfilm, which if you haven't had to do microfilm, it is awful. I hope for one day, some genius needs to be thinking about how to make microfilm easier to navigate and is more accessible, because it's just not that accessible, but it's been used for the past like 70 some years. Maybe, don't quote me on that. But the good thing that came out of this project is that we were able to support the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara, the three affiliated tribes, to get copies of those journals and everything for them to use at their cultural center that they just opened. And you can Google it. It had a recent news release with NPR calling it a digital repatriation. It definitely isn't, but it'd be a way more confusing to explain. Like, because the digital repatriation would be to give the stuff back and then us keep the digital copy, but they have a copy of the stuff and we still have the stuff. It's still a great thing because the fact of it is they've had copies of microfilm, so they've never had great copies of these things. And then there's opportunity to talk about how these items might be able to go back to the cultural center. So like that kind of work, like connecting the dots to be able to complete the stories of these objects is like what I really enjoy with working with collections and working at museums and being parts of exhibits and stuff like that.
So on to the Minnesota Historical Society's the exhibits. I know you're the curator of the Our Home Native Minnesota. And could you just talk about that and, you know, what that exhibit wanted to accomplish?
Yeah, of course. So Our Home Native Minnesota, in a month, it'll celebrate its third anniversary being opened. It was a long time coming, and for a couple of reasons. Something that the Minnesota Historical Society people see it as like an authority of talking about Minnesota history. And so folks would be like, well, I want to learn more about Indigenous history. How can you help me there? And we're like, well, it's like, you can go to the Mille Lacs Indian Museum, or you can go to Lower Sioux Agency or to Pipestone, or go visit a tribe. And they're like, but we're in the cities and we want to learn about it, you know, here. And a lot of, there was a lot of need from teachers, especially in social studies teachers, because they're the content to teach about Minnesota Indigenous history, I think, was added about like a decade ago to the social studies curriculum. And now they're adding it to more into the arts curriculum, into language arts and science, STEM as well, to talk about all those things. So there was a need for like resources. So then like and one of the big things that the History Center and a lot of the sites do is field trip locations, right? What does that look like then? So obviously an exhibit would be an easy thing. And it is the first permanent Native exhibit at the Minnesota History Center. There has been a lot of short-term exhibits, like about wild rice, like about the U.S. Dakota War of 1862, stuff like that. But they all been limited, usually less than a year. There's also Native content in some of the larger exhibits, but it's amongst other content too of other communities. So there isn't a sole focused. And we were, what was great in it is in 2016, a department called Native American Initiatives was created at the Historical Society. I wasn't in it at this time. I was in collections doing my collections thing, but it really showed the focus and need to have appropriate and accurate representation of Native history in the spaces that the Historical Society reaches. And so we've evolved we've actually doubled in size from just last year, which sounds amazing, but there's six of us now. There was three. So it's not too crazy, but still it's better. I think it's a great thing. And we're an all Native staff, which is really cool. So the question was like, well, how do we talk about the Indigenous people of Minnesota? And we're like, oh, no. Like you need a whole museum and then some to really be able to get everything. So how we wanted to talk about it is there is no timeline. We don't start from like 10,000 BC or whatever and end in today. Then none of that. We lead with contemporary voices and pieces because we wanted to counteract that notion that Native people are no longer here. So the first thing we have is contemporary pieces by contemporary living artists that are who have participated as part of our Native American Artists in Residence program at the Historical Society. And so it's just a great way to talk about cross-departmental work, the work that people do. One of the pieces is by Dr. Gwen Westerman, it's easy to talk about her because she's like the poet laureate now for the state of Minnesota. So I'm just all like, Gwen does this, 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 and this. And she reviewed our exhibit script for us. So like we had the people involved, it's just a great way. And we go through, like we have themes and, but it's, they're pretty much mixed together with the indigenous groups. We only separate Dakota and Ojibwe in two sections because we really wanted to center Dakota homeland. So people understand that this place is Dakota homeland. And then we share about, you know, the Ojibwe migration and that story and the importance of wild rights. And then the rest of the exhibit is intermixed with Dakota and Ojibwe stories. We do acknowledge that we are missing some of those indigenous stories that get overlooked, like our Ho-Chunk friends, for example. And I believe the Cheyenne were here in the Meskwaki, like thinking about those two and how we can expand on that. Because that is something that I know they, my Ho-Chunk friends bring up every once in a while. And so I'm all like, I try not to, I was like, I don't forget you, but it was like, we need to figure out how to fit those stories, weave them in better together with the larger story. Another thing we really want to focus on is a strong urban Native community that Minneapolis and St. Paul have, because so much has been born out of that urban community. And I literally, just before talking with you, we were speaking with a community member who, she was, you know, at the places with AIM. She worked with Dennis Bates. She worked with Gerald Visner, and she had all these stories. And I'm just like, oh, like, this is what I mean, just listening to her story. Like that's really what I like to do, is hear those things and share that story with, how can we share that story then with the masses so they can hear these kinds of things and how amazing they are.
Chimi Gwech, for joining us. I guess I'm curious if you had any final thoughts.
I think the thing I would like to say is that working at an institution like the Minnesota Historical Society is not easy. It can get really hard at times. There's a lot of trauma involved with it. But we're really like trying to do the best for our communities, because I know some people, they wouldn't be able want to do that kind of work. I've been told, they're like, by an elder, I could never do what you're doing, but I'm so glad you're here. And like hearing stuff like that, like that's what gets you all some way, because you're like, sometimes you're like, oh, this, you know, this is so frustrating. I should just do something else or whatever. But then you hear those kinds of things from community. And I think that's what keeps me going. So there's a lot of trauma involved, but there's a lot of healing to be done too. And I like bringing the community along with me as much as I can. So that is like, that's my whole goal. And I hope I'm doing my ancestors proud by that and my community proud.
I love the, you know, that generational thinking is something we've hit upon many, many times during the podcast. And it's an important thing to do.
Yeah.
So,
well, and yeah. Museums are so tricky too, you know, trying to, I mean, with the history, with Native, what did she call it? 3D art?
3D object.
3D objects instead of artifacts. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rad. So making changes for the better.
So thank you to Rita Walczak-Arndt, White Earth Nation citizen, who is the Program and Outreach Manager of the Native American Initiatives Department at the Minnesota Historical Society. I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening.
Kikawabamin.
Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine, is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Art is a way to open the door for tough conversations so that it's more welcoming and not so like in your face abrupt type of stuff.
This is Art Changes, stories on how creativity can change your community.
My name is Buddy King. I am the Chief Operating Officer for Higher Works Collaborative, and we are a nonprofit located here in St. Cloud, Minnesota. We partner with other organizations where we say, I want to bring in these different groups of people, and I want to talk about what it is to be Black in our community. What is it to be trans in our community? And let's utilize spoken word. Let's utilize music. Let's utilize all these different art tools to have these conversations. person does their spoken word. They talk about themselves. They talk about their community.